Thanks for listening to the podcast from Faith Radio Mornings.
Start your day connecting faith to life with Faith Radio Mornings.
Let it rise.
Good morning. 4 minutes after the hour is Monday, May 15th. Hard to believe it's the middle of the month already. But here we are. Spring is here, and I think the weather is going to be a little wet this week from what I've been told, but I think that we can count on wet weather this week here in the upper Midwest. So wherever you are, I hope you've got an umbrella or at least a raincoat. That'd be helpful. And I hope you had a chance to fuss over your mother if she's still with you, and it would be nice to hear a story or two of how you might have touched your mother emotionally with an act of kindness that you did for her on Mother's Day yesterday. I would be amused to hear that. Email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. You know, Mother's Day is kind of an invention. I think it was, I don't know when it started, but certainly a way to sell greeting cards and boost that industry, which is always looking for new holidays to excite the industry. But I bet Jesus was a good son. I bet he was good to his mother, and he was probably always a good role model. And I bet being a single guy, a lot of women looked at him and thought, okay, now this is a guy that would make a great husband. I mean, here's a guy who can turn water into wine and feed 5,000 with a loaf of bread and a couple of fish. All right, you'd have a wedding reception that would cost $13.95. This would be an awesome opportunity to really save money on a wedding. And, you know, just imagine the no trips to ER with ear infections. You know, dad'll just handle it. A dream come true, right? There we go. All right. What else is going on in the news? The Pope is going to have a meeting with the president. President Trump and Pope Francis are going to share some thoughts about the president's trip to the Vatican coming up later this month. The Pope told reporters Saturday that he plans to keep an open mind and not pass judgment until hearing the president out. The two men have been at odds over the views on a number of issues, including immigration and climate change. The Pope says it's important to find common ground and move forward step by step. He will meet with the Pope May 24th as part of a tour of the Middle Eastern and Europe. And also, I thought this was kind of interesting. I had to give this guy a lot of credit. This guy in England, on his 101st birthday, decided that, what the heck, I'm a World War II vet, I'm 102, I'm going to jump out of a plane. And that's what he did. Bryson Hayes, he said, age is only a number. Let me remind all of you, age is only a number, according to Bryson. And he set the record for the oldest skydiver ever. He took his leap of faith over the English countryside. Yesterday, the D-Day hero beat the previous record by a Canadian by 35 days. And he took his grandkids and great-grandkids along with him. What a fun outing with great-great-grandpa. all right, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to talk to Dr. Linda Mintel up next. So don't go anywhere. Be back in a minute. Happy Monday. It's 8 minutes after the hour. Dr. Linda Mintel is the host of the Dr. Linda Mintel Show on weekends here on Faith Radio. And she recently was at graduation at Liberty U. You had kind of an interesting keynote speaker, didn't you, Linda?
We did. It was quite the day. I think I met my colleagues at 5:15 in the morning to make sure that we would get there in time for security. So it was quite a long day. I had a daughter who graduated with her master's, but that didn't end until 6:30 at night. So it was quite the day.
What an exciting day, though.
You know, it was actually good. It was really great. We thought we were going to get stormed out, and we didn't. The weather held off, and I actually watched Air Force One go over my head when I was walking to my car. So a lot of fun things happening.
So kids are graduating and they're looking to the future, and I hope that they have developed strong, healthy habits. They've learned to manage their emotions and their thoughts and their behaviors. Can we talk about some things that mentally strong people don't do?
Yeah, there was a great blog on this by a lady named Amy Morin who wrote about that. She had 13 things that mentally strong people don't do, and I think they're really good for us to think about in terms of what does take us down a negative path in our thinking? And one of the first things that she says is mentally strong people don't feel sorry for themselves. They don't think about the past. They don't waste time and on energy on things that they can't control, and things that maybe they've done wrong. And one of the things that is said always at a graduation is don't be afraid to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to make mistakes, and don't be afraid to look at those mistakes and learn from those mistakes. And that's really important when you're going forward in life, because you are not going to do everything correct. You're going to have to take a few risks here and there and try things. And when you do try something, if you just think, oh, this was terrible, this was wrong, and you do what psychologists like to say, ruminate on mm-hmm. your mistakes, you get to a mentally negative place, and it isn't good for pushing you forward.
Okay, what about another thing that mentally strong people don't do is they don't give away their power. And by power, that means we're not going to let somebody dictate how we feel. Okay, my boss made me feel bad, and I'm going to stay in that zone of feeling bad.
Boy, this is just such an important one, Bill, because I say this. I have said this to my children probably every year of their life, from the time that they were in grade school to the brutal years of middle school where they're getting teased and, you know, people are bullying each other and there's a lot of difficulty during that time, high school. I always said to them, look, no one has the power to define you but God.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only one who really can say who you are. And if you read the scripture, and we spent lots of time in our family life going through what does God say about who we are? And we go through those scriptures of how he thinks about us, how he cares for us, how he unconditionally loves us. And then I would always tell them, don't give other people the power to decide who you are. And no matter what other people do to you, the only thing you have control over is the way you react to those people. And so you may not be able to control people from saying bad things, from doing bad things, from hurting you in some way, but you do have the power to react in a way that honors God and imitates the life of Christ. And that's the part we do control.
Yeah. Now, Linda, mentally strong people don't try to avoid change, do they?
They don't. And this is a hard one for a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Because we like our comfort zone.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, we like to be. My parents grew up in the same house. They lived in the same house for 67 years.
Wow.
And it was really interesting, Bill, when I went to disconnect my parents' phone number because my mom died a few years ago, and we moved my dad into one of those independent living places because the house just got to be too much for him to take care of. It was funny. I called the phone company, and I was going to disconnect their number. And the woman on the other end goes, I don't know if I've ever seen this. But you have the same. Your parents have had the same phone number for almost 70 years.
Oh my goodness!
That was a record.
Uh-huh.
So I grew up with not much change.
Oh
in my
yeah,
life.
I can see that. All right, how about?
Yeah, and then I married a missionary kid, though. Let me tell you this: whose change was part of their everyday life, and
yeah.
They moved every couple of years and did all kinds of stuff. And one of the great things about that is change is not a bad thing. And if we can embrace it and we can say, okay, what am I going to learn from this? What's going to happen with this? If we can learn to take some risks and just embrace change for the good that's going to come out of it, and even sometimes what is God going to teach us during that time,
mm-hmm.
that can be a really great thing mentally for a person.
Yeah. Is it have to do with managing anxiety when the whole idea of change comes up? Because change, like you just said, can be really good and God's trying to teach us something. Yet somehow we all kind of panic when it comes to change.
Yeah, we like the familiar.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
That's the big thing. We just like what's familiar, even in relationships sometimes that are dysfunctional. It's not that we like that dysfunction, but there is something familiar about that dysfunction that allows us sometimes to continue in it without making that change. Because when we make a change, we're not really sure what is going to happen on the other end. And that's that whole business of feeling like you're losing control over what might happen, and you're moving into the unknown. And, you know, unless we're Captain Kirk and we're, you know, boldly going where no man has gone before,
mm-hmm.
most of us don't embrace that. Most of us are kind of, what's going to be there on the other end? And I'm not so sure I want to go there.
Yeah.
But again, if you prayed and you know that something is of the Lord and you know that you need to take a step forward with something new, then, you know, just pray about that and ask God to give you the grace to move forward. And again, if your mind is stayed on the Lord, he's going to keep you in perfect peace and he's going to help you make those changes and deal with them in an appropriate way.
Okay, Linda, something else mentally strong people don't do is they don't waste energy on things they can't control, like lost luggage or a traffic jam or something like that. They just stay calm in those moments.
Yeah, and that really has a lot to do with, I think, emotional intelligence. And that is a whole topic in and of itself. But that's really when you're quite aware of your emotions and you don't let your emotions control you. You have some control over your emotions. So, again, it's that whole idea of, you know, things maybe aren't going to go the way I want them to, but if I can just roll with those things that happen in my life and not get so upset with the guy who just cut me off on the highway, then maybe I'll be able to stay calmer, to have a little bit more peace in my life and not be so stressed.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's getting at that whole idea of just letting life kind of progress and don't waste all this energy in the what ifs, because the what ifs are the anxiety producers in our life.
Mm-hmm. Linda, I want to, after the break, touch base with a couple of more of these ideas, and then I want to get to the blog you wrote this morning. So we'll take a short break and be back more with Dr. Linda Mintel in just a minute. Eighteen minutes after the hour, you've heard of must-see TV. This is must-hear radio. And if you want to experience this in 3D, now would be the time to put on your 3D glasses. I'm talking to Dr. Linda Mintel. We're talking about what healthy people don't do. And I want to touch base just on one or two more here, Linda, before we move on. But mentally strong people don't resent other people's success.
Boy, that's a tough one in our culture, isn't
it?
Oh,
is it ever? Because, we're always comparing ourselves.
Yeah.
Especially on social media, anti-social media, I should say.
Yeah. And you look at, you know, all these shows on television that talk about having a bigger house and, you know, having this and having that and, you know, all the materialism that we all face. And yet with that, we tie that to success, and we don't always think about success the way God defines success, which might be having a strong family, which might be, you know, putting into your children eternal values, which might be being kind to the person who is on the corner who doesn't have any food that day or doesn't have a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
Those are measures of success that we don't seem to envy with people. We tend to go into the materialism that people have. And James is really clear, as so many other books of the Bible are, about not envying and not coveting what other people have. In fact, it was one of the original commandments. So we have to be very careful of that, and we know from a mental health standpoint that if you don't envy other people's success and you have a peace about what God is doing in your own life and you learn to be content, as Paul told us to be, in all things, that's a much better place in life to be.
Mm-hmm. Another thing mentally strong people don't do is they don't dwell on the past. That's a toughie, too.
It is, because a lot of times our past does influence us, and it is part of the way we respond in the present, but it doesn't have to be prescriptive. And so part of the work that I do with people is we look at the past in terms of what can we learn from it, what are the patterns of behavior that we've brought in maybe from our original families or from the way that we've been working with people, and what do we need to change about that. But to go back and to just dwell on things, mistakes you've made, you know, bad decisions you've made, the way people have hurt you, the terrible things that maybe have happened to you, you need to work through those things and resolve them, and you need to forgive people, because we know that if you don't forgive, then what's going to happen is you're going to develop a root of bitterness, which is going to affect you not only in your mental health, but in your physical body and in your spiritual health. So mentally strong people do not dwell on the past. They look at that, they learn from it, they move forward, and they appropriate God's forgiveness and his grace in their lives, and they give that grace to other people as well.
You know, when we talk about mentally strong people, Linda, I always want to start with the premise that we're mentally strong because we're equipped in Christ. And that's what gives us the opportunity and the chance to be mentally strong. And these are some of the effects of having mental strength. But it also says mentally strong people don't feel like the world owes them anything.
Yeah, that, which is, again, kind of an interesting concept in a culture where we're told on a daily basis what we deserve, that we deserve this, we're entitled to this, You and I have had conversations about entitlement and narcissism in our culture because of the way we feel we deserve to have everything that we want, and we have it. We want it immediately.
Yeah.
So again, we don't. If we look at the scriptural basis for that, we don't deserve anything, and it's by, you know, God giving us His Son Jesus and Jesus going on the cross for us that we are even given anything, including eternal life, because of Him. So if we keep the right perspective, and we understand that we don't deserve a thing, but yet God has richly blessed us and given us every good gift. Scripture says every good gift comes from the Father above. Then we stay in a humble position, and we don't go into that negative thinking about deserving and being entitled.
Mm-hmm. I just want to wrap this up, and I want to get to your blog, but mentally strong people don't expect immediate results. I think that's kind of a big one, because we live in instant gratification society, and we want what we want when we want it, and we want lots of it, and we want it now.
And technology doesn't help us with that, does it?
No, it really doesn't.
Because we're able to get things at the click of a button. You know, I train medical students, and I'm just thinking of the difference of when, you know, medical students in the 80s would have to go to a library and look something up. And, you know, even the really old days where we had microfiche. Now I'm going to really date myself with that at libraries. But now, you know, you can be in the middle of a consult, and you can click on your up-to-date. You can get an answer to anything.
Right.
Immediately. And so we're so used to having that immediate gratification, which is actually changing the brain, Bill, and that is, it's not changing it in good ways, this constant logging on and being wired to everything that we can get instantly. And again, you know, we think about these old adages of good things come to those who wait, and you know, to have patience, which is one of the fruit of the Spirit, to be long-suffering and to be patient. This is what builds our character. This is what brings us to a point in life where we can endure difficulty in the future. So mentally strong people don't expect immediate results. They know that they have to work and they have to wait for things. And especially from a faith perspective, we have to wait in the timing of God's timing, knowing that His timing is always best. And most of the time in my life, that has not been an immediate answer to a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Linda, I want to kind of wrap up our time talking about these fidget spinners. They're the big talk. They're all over right now, and it's on the top of many parents' minds, because they say that there's some scientific advantage to using them, because it can help calm down kids that have ADHD and make them less distracted. To me, it doesn't seem like it's less of a distraction. It seems like more of a distraction. Your thoughts?
It does, and in talking to teachers, it's really funny because they make this low kind of whirring sound, and you get a whole bunch of them going in a classroom, and it is distracting. Plus, it's just distracting to have anything that's kind of like a toy
totally.
In a classroom that kids are fidgeting with. I mean, let's just be real. We're already dealing with high distractions anyway, with all the things that kids can bring into a classroom. And then to add something like this just seems like kind of a no-brainer of this is probably not a good idea. But I did look at the science, Bill, and that's the important part. And I looked at places like Duke University, and there's a leading autism expert at Mount Sinai Health System in New York City. And there really, at this point, is no evidence that using these little gadgets calms down a child. And in fact, when you think about something like ADHD, that fidgeting that ADHD kids do, and anybody who has a child with ADHD or has seen a kid in a classroom or anywhere knows that they're restless, they're moving. But part of that movement, that physical movement, we think is doing something to the brain in a good way and helping them with their focusing tasks. And when you outsource that into some little gadget that you're just touching and it's not your body movement, it's not the same thing as a coping mechanism of helping a kid calm down. So I don't think at this point, from everything I looked at, there isn't any evidence that these things are really going to help. Now, I know that parents who have kids with ADHD are always looking for something to help them, and so there's a lot of anecdotal stories online about this helped my child. But we got to look at the evidence. I'm a scientist. I try to look at what the evidence says. And right now, I would say it's a fun toy, but the better thing is to get your kid out there and get them active and get them running and playing. You know, if you want to do something in schools to really help kids, bring recess back. That would be the best help of all.
For sure. Yeah. Bring King of the Hill back at recess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what about when kids work their grandparents going, hey, Grandma, Grandpa, get me one of these fidget spinners. And all of a sudden, the parents are going, no, it's not a good idea. And So it is important to get an understanding that this is not scientific, and it might be a fun toy, but it might not be helping your grandson or granddaughter or child that has ADHD.
Yeah, and in fact, we have some cautions that we have to look at in terms of what it may do to the brain in some kids. So we have to be really careful to put those kinds of expectations on a product that really hasn't been tested or developed from that point of view. And again, I just caution people, you know, it's probably a toy, a fad toy. It's probably going to come and go. Interesting, when I looked at the background of this, it's been around for a long time. Nobody has picked it up as a fun little device until now. So if it was that great and that important, I'm kind of thinking that somebody would have discovered it a long time ago
as
intervention or help for mental issues.
Some smart marketer. Thanks, Linda.
All right. Great to talk to you.
Yep.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks. We're going to take a short break. Here's some news, and then we're going to have Dr. Richard Land weigh in just a minute. Be back in a couple of minutes. Good morning. Just about half past the hour. You know, we've got the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference coming up. That's going to be in July. The numbers are piling up, getting big. It's getting exciting. Liz Curtis Higgs, the big keynote speaker. You can learn questions and get all your questions answered about becoming a writer, a successful Christian writer. Does that sound like you? Cool. You should sign up. We're going to take a news break and be right back. Twenty-three minutes until the top of the hour, people living in fear may try to hide it with external accomplishments, but they still feel paralyzed internally. Pastor Derwin Gray describes how Jesus frees us from fear and moves us to faith.
People would look at my life and they would say, wow, you really accomplished a lot. Well, externally, I may have looked courageous, but internally, there was a lot of fear. And so the way that I moved from fear to courageous was in essence adopting who Christ says that I am, that he says I am more than a conqueror. And so I had to, by faith, rest in what he's done. And ultimately, perfect love casts out all fear. And so the greater I recognized that Jesus loved me, the more it drove out that fear.
Jesus does love you. I will agree to that completely. You can find that full interview on our website at myfaithradio.com. God-given identity is what you would type in, and you'll get right to Derwin Gray's message on that. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back on our studio line, Dr. Richard Land. Be back in a minute.
I read a fascinating story about a mom who never left her son's side. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Travis loved to jump from the swings at the playground because his mom was always there to catch him before he hit the ground. Then came the first day of kindergarten, and when it was time for recess, Travis climbed into the swing, got up as high as he could, and took a big leap, only this time, mommy wasn't around. So he fell and broke his arm. When Travis's mom got the phone call, she was absolutely furious and shouted, "This whole thing happened because I wasn't there." His teacher replied, "No, it happened because you were always there." Don't shield your teen from the consequences of their actions. The later they learn, the more painful the lesson will be.
Find more parenting help from Mark Gregston when you go online to parentingtodaysteens.org.
Good morning. 20 minutes until the top of the hour. Bill Arnold here with you. And Dr. Richard Land is the president of Southern Evangelical Seminary. And his Houston Astros are in first place with a 7.5 game lead. Should we just close in prayer, Dr. Land?
Well, I wish it were the end of the season.
I bet. And did Mrs. Land have a nice Mother's Day?
She did. She said she thanked me very much. We had a good day together. I got to preach, which is always great. I always enjoy doing that. And then we had a lovely meal and had some fellowship. And she got some chocolate-covered strawberries, which is one of her favorites.
Nice.
And a couple of books. She's a big bookworm like I am.
Mm-hmm. And did you get a chance to sample one of those chocolate-covered strawberries?
I had half of one.
And why just half? Now you've got me curious.
Well, that's all I was. My appetite was satisfied at the moment. So
okay,
fair enough.
And you probably left the part that had the green part on, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, awesome. I just to make sure you're eating it in the right direction. Okay, let's talk about, first of all, last time we spoke, you were on your way to the White House. Let's just touch on that real quickly. How was that?
It was incredible.
Okay.
No visit to the White House is ever routine or mundane. I can promise you that, no matter how many times you've been there. But the president spent nearly 3 hours with us. I was absolutely stunned. These were members of the Evangelical Faith Advisory Board. We had a reception. Then we had our picture taken with him. And then we had dinner at the White House. And then after dinner, he said, you know, I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm going to do it anyway. And he's going, I'm going to take you up to the third floor. So he gave us a personal tour of the third floor, the living quarters.
Wow.
And the Lincoln bedroom and the Gettysburg, the desk where Lincoln wrote the Gettysburg Address. And then he took us out on the Truman balcony. And that was, aside from being amazing, that was really funny because all the way upstairs, the Secret Service was saying, no pictures, no pictures, no pictures. So we all put our cell phones in our pocket. We get up to the third floor. We get out on the Truman balcony. And the president says, how many of y'all want pictures? Everybody hauls out their camera. And I said to one of my colleagues, it looks to me like the president's hard to handle. And the Secret Service guy said, you got that right.
Oh, funny.
I also saw history made because I was they had different people from the administration sitting at different tables. And Rance Priebus was at my table. And about 7:30, we were just finishing our salad when an aide came in and whispered in Rance Priebus's ear, and Rance turned to Ralph Reed and to me, who was sitting, we were sitting next to him, and said, we just got the votes to pass health care reform.
Wow.
And he told the aide to go tell the president. So I got to see the president be told that they were over the hump on health care reform in the House.
That's really fun.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, and the president was very engaging. It was a remarkable evening.
What did you think about the president's remark at Liberty University when he gave the commencement address and said, we don't worship government, we worship God? What did you think of his address?
Well, I've only seen excerpts from
it.
What I saw, I agreed with. I certainly would agree with that statement.
We worship God,
certainly not government. You know, obviously, I mean, the president is comfortable around people of faith. And, you know, I don't know him well. I've now met him four times, been on the phone with him a couple of times with a lot of other people, not one-to-one. He's a person who I think is receptive to things of faith. The thing that I took away that was the most interesting to me, the most compelling to me from both the Wednesday night dinner and the Thursday morning Rose Garden ceremony where he signed the National Day of Prayer Proclamation and the Religious Liberty Executive Order was he was introduced both Wednesday night and Thursday morning by Mike Pence, the Vice President. And on both occasions, the Vice President said, among other things, that President Trump was a believer. Hmm. Now, you know Mike Pence. I know Mike Pence.
Mm-hmm.
I know Mike Pence well. Mike Pence is an evangelical 24-karat gold,
yes, he is,
genuine believer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are a lot of things he could have said that would have been less definitive, like the president is a man of faith. That's not what he said. What he said was, President Trump is a believer.
Wow.
Now,
awesome.
when Mike Pence says that, then as a fellow evangelical, I know what he means by that.
Mm-hmm.
He means exactly what I mean and exactly what you mean.
Right.
And so, you know, I certainly hope that's true. I certainly hope it's true. I was told by one of the aides that the president and the vice president, at the president's request, pray together daily.
That's awesome. I just hope he kind of takes back the I've never repented line. That'd be nice if we heard something about that.
Well, you know, I think he's, I don't know this. I don't know this. But I think I've gotten the impression that he's been told that he should probably not say much about his faith journey because it will be taken, you know, the press would jump all over it and say he's just doing this to try to manipulate people and that it's not genuine and that it's best just to stay off the subject.
Okay, Dr. Land, I'm going to take a break. I want to come back. Let's talk a little bit about the business of D.C. and the firing of James Comey and some of the drama that surrounds it. And I'd like to get your input on a few other things, too. We'll be back in just a minute. 14 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Thank you for listening. We love that you're here with us. Be back in a minute. Minutes till the top of the hour. Bill Arnold here. I'm talking to Dr. Richard Land, fresh from his return to the White House. I bet you didn't go to the White House last week, but he did. What a great story he had. Dr. Land, I'd like to ask a little bit about the firing of James Comey and some of the shrapnel that's getting picked out everywhere in Washington, D.C. right now. There's lots of it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the press, the national press in general, and the Democratic Party leadership in general have been disgraceful. Here's a man that they called upon to be fired last year, said he was an enemy of the Republic. And now when the president terminates him, all of a sudden it's a threat to the Republic that he's been terminated. let's understand. And, you know, they immediately went to their Nixon Watergate playbook. You know,
yeah.
It's like they always go back to their glory days. This is a totally disanalogous analogy. There was a good deal of evidence that a crime had been committed before Mr. Nixon terminated Archibald Cox and Elliot Richardson. There's no evidence of a crime. I mean, everybody so far the director of national intelligence has said they found no evidence. I mean, you know, it's getting to the point now of how do you prove a negative? When people keep saying there's a crime, you know, that the Trump campaign and Mr. Trump colluded with the Russians, and there's no evidence, no evidence whatsoever. You know, that really, you know, lawyers and prosecutors will tell you, when you start, you know, saying people committed a crime when there's no evidence that you committed a crime, you're tilting the scales of justice. There is no evidence of collusion. And so for the Democratic Party, Democratic Party leadership to continue on this, it just shows that they still have Trump derangement syndrome. They cannot come to terms with the fact that they lost the election. And, you know, whether WikiLeaks did it or whether the Russians did it and used WikiLeaks as a cover, the big problem is not the leak. The problem is what they leaked. They leaked a presidential candidate who should have been, and under most FBI directors, would have been indicted July 2016.
Yes.
When you run a person for office who is so ethically and morally challenged, you ought to expect that you're going to lose.
Well, Dr. Land, how would the Democrats, how would they have reacted if President Trump said, yeah, I taped James Comey. I have the audio files on my private server I kept in the bathroom. But, you know, they accidentally got deleted with bleach bit.
Well, that would be a problem because if there are tapes, they belong to the United States.
True.
I mean, that is the property of the government of the United States. It's not Mr. Trump's personal property. So he would have to there had to be an investigation of how government property got destroyed and whether that was obstruction of justice.
Mm-hmm. So the firing of James Comey, of course, there's never a good time for it to happen, but it is interesting the way the left has responded. And
well, I'll tell you, you know, to show you just how wily, and I mean this as a compliment, just how wily Mitch McConnell is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mitch McConnell said, "Well, why don't we urge the president to pick Merrick Garland, who was the person that President Obama had nominated for the Supreme Court."
Mm-hmm.
And what that would do is kill two birds with one stone. How can the Democrats criticize a person they wanted to be on the Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
to be FBI director, and it opens up another appeals court vacancy for Mr. Trump to fill?
Love it. And I love the fact that you used the word Wiley on the show.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know, Senator McConnell has a well-deserved reputation for being one of the slyest foxes in the Senate.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about the violence that's going on college campuses today. And the violence is really, it's the American left is talking. And free speech, where do we go with this?
Well, the problem is that these young people have been brainwashed by professors who are proto-fascists into a total new understanding of the First Amendment. When I was growing up, and to this day, I believe the First Amendment and freedom of speech means that I disagree with everything that Madeleine Murray O'Hare said, and I defend to the death her right to say it. They don't think that. They believe that free speech does not include speech that is offensive or harmful or threatening to anyone, especially to, quote, oppressed groups, end quote. And, of course, in their mind, everyone except white males are oppressed groups. And so it's dangerous. It's very dangerous. And it shows you the extent to which education has sunk into brainwashing and indoctrination on our college campuses. And how would it not when you now have a 12-to-1 ratio between liberal professors and conservative professors on campuses?
Well, I'm still stuck on proto-fascist because I'm not sure I know what that means.
Well, a fascist is someone who does not believe in free speech and believes in using violence to suppress free speech. And these people don't claim the rest of fascism, but they're the harbingers of it.
Okay. Yeah, that clears things up. Now, Dr. Land, how can we respond biblically in this culture that's just getting increasingly more irrational and violent? And how do we as biblical Christians encounter our culture effectively?
Well, first of all, we have to have a biblical worldview and apply that biblical worldview to issues and speak the truth in love. When people say that a baby at the moment after conception is not a baby, we need to speak the truth in love. Because this is not a statement of faith. It's a statement of scientific, biological fact that when the sperm enters the egg and conception takes place, a new human life has begun, period. And we speak the truth in love. We speak the truth. We don't back down from the truth, but we speak the truth in love. We make it clear that we disagree with these people, but we don't hate them. They may hate us, but we don't hate them. They may want to suppress us. We don't want to suppress them.
Yeah. So I know speaking the truth in love is critical, but sometimes I think the opposing side looks at us and says, you're so arrogant. How do we get ourselves away from that concept of coming across as arrogant?
Well, of course, it depends on what they're, they take certainty for arrogance.
Okay.
That's because they've been immersed in a world of moral relativism.
That's true.
And that leads to the kind of thing I saw in People magazine this last week. There was a letter from a woman who said that it was on a previous story on Caitlyn Jenner. And she said the story on Caitlyn Jenner underscores the fact that even though we may not agree with someone about their version of the truth, we have to accept it.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? That's intellectual suicide.
Yeah.
That, when you start saying that, yes, I accept the fact that you were born Caucasian, but that you want to now identify as an African-American, that is psychotic. Now, the old joke was that a neurotic is someone who builds sandcastles in the sky and a psychotic is someone who moves in. Well, the American left is in the process of moving into their sandcastles in the sky.
Oh, boy. Well, once again, Dr. Land, you're a delight. I so appreciate your insight, and thanks so much for coming on the show, and I always look forward to talking to you.
Well, thank you, and people want more information, they can go to ses.edu. We have stuff on all these subjects.
Yeah, and for more information on the Houston Astros, your favorite team, you can go to MLB.com.
That's right.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
All right, see you. 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for listening today. We loved having you on board, and thank you for supporting Faith Radio. It means the world to us. We love you. Have a great day. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this Faith Radio Mornings podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can make your gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Faith Radio Mornings, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or on your podcast player. And thanks for sharing the audio link with a friend and growing the impact of Faith Radio Mornings.